Let's bring in John Mattis into the conversation. Follow him on Twitter at MattisJohn, courtesy of the Scores NHL coverage. What is going on, John? Enjoying the first couple weeks of NHL hockey here?
Yeah, a little bit more than the folks in New Jersey and Dallas. It's been fun. It's been a bit of a, you know, from Seinfeld when they have the bizarro world.
Right.
Yeah. Like we're living in one right now with the NHL season. Maybe not to that full extent of all the extremes being unreasonable, but there's a lot of weird things happening out there.
Well, and you know, it's one of those things. Anytime you look at a 10-game sample, you can get a lot of, you know, variance, and it doesn't really mean much in the big picture because things can happen in a short sample. But there are teams like, say, Minnesota, for instance, and I know they won their last game, but you know the pressure has always been on Bruce Boudreau. They have a new general manager. They wanted to make more moves, like trading Zucker, but they weren't able to do it. You have the Dallas Stars that have been aggressive, and we know how much pressure the top of the organization has put on the team. And New Jersey has Taylor Hall in a contract year. So if you look at those teams with the most question marks around them, which one do you think could make a knee-jerk reaction first, whether it's a trade or a firing?
Well, I would think it's pretty obvious with the New Jersey Devils, just because, you know, John Hines has been there for a while. They come off this offseason where everything clicks for them. They get the number one draft choice. They have a nice injection of talent on the back end with P.K. Subban. You know, Taylor Hall is negotiating with the team. When really they've given them, I wouldn't say they've given them no reason to resign, but it's not like, you know, they're this team that's you know, on track to have tremendous success over the next 7 or 8 years. So they came into the year as, I'd say, like a fringe contender for a playoff spot in the Metro. The Metro's a little wonky. It's kind of a mishmash of a bunch of teams that are okay, but not great. And then things have really gone downhill. And, I mean, it's interesting because the ownership group there, they also own the 76ers, and obviously they've given the 76ers a long leash over the years. They're notorious with tanking, and you wonder if that plays into the Devils or if they view them as two separate entities, because on one hand, you go to John Hines and go, hey, this is a small sample. Don't worry about it. You know, keep, you know, trusting the process, as they say. Or there's the other side where, you know, the Devils are viewed completely differently, and the hockey team just isn't performing to the best of their abilities, and it's time to discuss maybe a coaching change. So I'd say the Devils, just because, you know, that's a tough hole to jump out of, 0-6, essentially. I know they're 0-4-2 technically, but not having a win in six games is really going to hurt, and especially when, you know, you look at, say, a team like the Oilers, who are on the other side of the spectrum where they've won more probably than anyone could have expected. They might have a chance to make the playoffs here, just because you start to break down the fact that when you do so well in your first six games, you know, you set yourself up for success for the rest of the season. It doesn't mean you're guaranteed a playoff spot, but if you go 500, you're going to be pretty damn close. With the Devils, you know, going 0-6 essentially to start the season, it's really hard to come out of that hole. We saw it with Arizona last year, and really we see it every year. So, I mean, if at the 10-game mark they only have one or two wins, I wouldn't put it past them to at least consider a coaching change.
The Devils one is so interesting, too, because, like, the usage of some of their players is so confounding. It's like Nikita Gusev is on the fourth line at times. Jack Hughes is third line. It seems like there's an obvious top six players you'd throw together, but the coach is, you know, kind of doubling down on his own beliefs that, like, hey, you've got to earn the time when he might be out of time.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Gusev and Hughes is that we can't forget that rookies don't always come into the league and absolutely hit it out of the park. I think we've grown accustomed to that happening because we've been spoiled with this new generation that is just so skilled and so set up for success that we think, oh, game one of their NHL career, here we go. We got Jack Hughes as an elite player for the next, you know, 15 years. Well, he's hit a couple of stumbling blocks here. I don't know if you guys saw, I think it was last night, the Panthers game, where he had basically an open net and hit the post. I mean, like, these type of things are happening to a guy who's 18 years old, who has a tremendous career ahead of him, and it's sort of being compounded with the fact that the rest of the team hasn't picked up the slack. So, I mean, it's six games, and I don't think, at least at this very moment, there should be any panic in the Devils organization. But it snowballs, right? And especially when you have the Taylor Hall negotiations lurking in the background, because Like, the guy is going to be a UFA. He can do whatever he wants, but he's at least said, let's talk. And obviously Hughes is a huge factor there, where that changes the dynamic of that organization for the foreseeable future. So they already have that on their side, but you got to start winning hockey games. Taylor Hall has lost a lot of hockey over his entire career, made the playoffs once, and he controls his future here. So there's a lot of pressure points here, you know, whether it's the coach, whether it's Taylor Hall, whether it's Corey Schneider, whether it's Jack Hughes and all the expectations heaped around him. It'll be interesting to see how this develops, especially as October rolls around and November kind of picks up, and the real early season, weirdness wears off.
While we're talking about rookie struggles, and we're talking to John Mattis of The Score here, who has impressed you as far as rookies starting off hot? I know Victor Olofsson's one, Cale Makar, but who stood out to you?
Well, it's hard to not shine a light on Olofsson, just because he's a guy that we don't know much about. You have to keep in mind, of course, that all five of his goals are on the power play, and he's been paired with some tremendous players, starting with Jack Hughes. So Olsen's a great story. I don't know where that'll end up, because he doesn't have the pedigree of a guy like, say, Cale Makar, which we assumed would be in the conversation for the Calder Trophy, and most definitely is after a few weeks here. I guess from those two guys, to keep it, you know, in Toronto where I'm based, Makayev's been really good on the fourth line there, and I know that's not the sexiest, you know, thing to say in terms of, you know, the Calder race or anything like that, but he kind of came here with low expectations. The Leafs have loved the Russians over the last couple of years, and they're very hit or miss, mostly miss, to be honest. And Makayev has just been so quick and so smart, and he's just a guy who has been able to put the puck in the net at a pretty high rate. I think he actually leads the team in goals per 60 minutes at this point, and just has the makings of this player that was unearthed out of Russia that no one really knew much about. So I think Makayev's been interesting, a nice surprise for the Maple Leafs. And then I think Cody Glass in Vegas also needs a little bit of a love, because we kind of forgot about the guy, right? I mean, he gets drafted a couple of years ago as the first Golden Knight draft pick. And then, you know, obviously works his way through the development system and is finally here and looks the part. So we'll see how that develops, because obviously Vegas is a pretty mature team. They have a lot riding on this season. How much responsibility are they going to give this guy over the long term? But he looks pretty good right now. High hockey IQ, wins faceoffs, just kind of blends right into their forward group, which is pretty dangerous. The last guy, I guess, would be Ville Hanola in Winnipeg. Yeah. I mean, I guess he's been thrust into the role that he's in for the wrong reasons, because of the injuries and losing players in the offseason. And, you know, the results haven't been amazing. But let's not forget, this guy was drafted a couple months ago,
yeah,
20th overall. This guy wasn't expected to make the team in any respect. And I was talking to someone from the organization last week, and they were just blown away by his training camp. And, like, he earned it. It's not like they didn't have anyone left in the AHL with Manitoba. Like, this guy came to camp ready to go, looking like a professional hockey player, and a guy who is worth the 9-game stint for the NHL team. So we'll see where that goes, but off the top of my head, those are guys who jump out, because, you know, obviously Hughes hasn't had the start that we all expected, and Kako as well has only one goal. So that's a really interesting rookie class.
Well, and what do you think of what we've seen from Quinn Hughes so far? I mean, it's only been 4 games from him here in Vancouver. He's taken the breath away from Canucks fans and us watching him. I mean, the kid's incredible. And tonight he goes up against the Detroit Red Wings. And we were talking to Max Boltman out of Detroit, who covers the Red Wings. And we asked him, hey, how do Red Wings fans feel about Quinn Hughes, considering he was selected one spot after Philip Zadina? And he's like, he gets brought up all the time. So just your thoughts on Quinn Hughes and what you've seen from him so far.
Yeah, well, my first introduction to him, at least on a more granular level, was at the World Juniors, I guess, 2 years ago in Buffalo. And I just couldn't take my eyes off the guy. Like, he, there's something about his presence where he's so smooth and so smart. And when he has the puck on his stick, you know, good luck getting it off of him. And he just finds these little holes in his small stature. And, like, it doesn't even factor in. He handles himself very well. I've been impressed with him. I mean, you bring it back to last season, and also, like I said, with his time in juniors and playing for the national team, there's been very little to pick at there. I think the skating is just unbelievable, and the way that he can get himself out of trouble, I think is pretty unique, and I think it's something that'll guide him to that, you know, cornerstone blue line benchmark that everyone is hoping that he hits. And I think if you're a Canucks fan, you got to be pretty excited about what you see. And you know, I guess you give him a little leash, right, to start out, and you can't expect the world of him, especially minutes wise. And you see where he's able to grow. I just, yeah, Quinn Hughes is right up there in terms of if you're thinking of players to watch around the league. Like obviously, McDavid tops that list, but like Quinn Hughes is probably in the top 10. If there's, you know, 12 games on that night on a Wednesday, let's just say, you know, if the Canucks are playing, I'm probably tuning in for the entertainment factor. And also the way that he's able to generate offense for his team. He completely brings up that potential, that kind of that expectation line for Vancouver right now. And we'll see what it ultimately does to their playoff chances. But on an individual level, I don't think you can ask for much more at this point.
While we focused on the teams at the bottom end of the standings, really quickly, we should look at the top of the non-playoff teams, Buffalo, Edmonton, and let's throw Anaheim in that mix. Which one are you buying?
Not buying Anaheim. I mean, it's hard not to buy Edmonton. Like this is Connor McDavid's team. This is Leon Draisaitl's team. They got to figure out eventually, right? And the James Neal acquisition has worked out tremendously through the early part of the season. So I buy that to an extent. Do I think that they're going to win the Pacific Division?
Mm-hmm.
No, but they put themselves in a tremendous spot here. The Sabres, I really like what they did on their back end. I think it's kind of been lost in the shuffle. There's so many transactions in the offseason, but they were able to revamp that group, and they're starting to get pucks up to guys like Jack Eichel and play a more a style that benefits those types of players, like a Sam Reinhart, Jack Eichel, and Jeff Skinner, those types of players that need the puck on their stick ASAP, off the rush, and are able to create offense. They've had problems kind of connecting those two positions over the last number of years. So if I were to rank sort of what I believe is to be true, I'd probably go with Buffalo impressing me the most and having the highest rate of sustainability, and then it would go Edmonton and then Anaheim. I don't really believe in
Sportsnet 650.